The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast, bringing you the latest from the world of sports, DFS, and gambling. With over 5 years of hot takes and millions of downloads later, I guess he's been doing something right. Now, sit back and listen to one of the sharpest minds in the game. Here's your host, Dwayne Callender.
Hello and welcome to the show, everyone. We have plenty to discuss. We were going to talk through Super Bowl props, just what I'm leaning towards in terms of bets available for the game. And we have some controversy with the NFL awards, which, frankly, I can't believe I actually have to talk about. But it's so stupid because of the voting format that I actually have to bring up the fact that this is why we're in the spot we are at times, because people don't know how to do math. It's just what it is. What can I say? But with that being said, first off, I want to talk about the New York Knicks. The Knicks actually made a trade that I actually am in full support of. I had a lot of question marks about the RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quigley for OG Anunoby trade. Oh, Anunoby, by the way, out with elbow surgery, heading into his contract year. But I will say that I was not worried about losing Barrett. I was worried about losing Quigley. That has been assuaged by the veterans on the team, like DiVincenzo and Hart, stepping up and doing the job. But this trade, essentially for the Knicks, where you only give up Quentin Grimes, who wasn't going to get enough playing time to develop the way he should in on an NBA roster. And I feel bad for Quentin Grimes, because basically he's getting sent to Detroit, which is a wasteland for NBA talent, because the Pistons have at least seven players that could be playing in that backcourt, and they're all logjammed with each other. So I still don't think Grimes is going to get the development time that he needs. But it is what it is. But the Knicks only gave up a second-round draft pick, and they get back Alec Burks, who slots in perfectly into the Grimes role and the Quigley role. So we actually have someone who can run the point for Brunson, thankfully, so we don't run Brunson into the ground. But the piece of the trade that everyone's interested in is Bojan Bogdanovic, who is a stretch forward who shoots threes. Guess what? This is not the trade people think it is, because people are thinking about this trade as he's the guy to get everyone through for an extra role player in the playoffs. No. Don't get it twisted, folks. Bogdanovic is here to give an evaluation of what the Knicks are going to look like next year. Because I got news for you. The person who should be most concerned moving forward is Julius Randle. Julius Randle, who never shows up come postseason time and chucks a bunch of bad threes, because the analytics say we need three-point shooting, and Julius is the guy who's more than happy to oblige on that front, chucking up shots. Guess what? Bogdanovich does Julius's job of stretching the floor with three-pointers exponentially better than Julius does. Even with Randle's improvements as a three-point shooter, Bogdanovich is, for his career alone, not even this year, his career alone is 4 percentage points higher as a three-point shooter. Bogdanovich is a over 40% three-point shooter. This is what the Knicks are looking for moving forward. The reason why I say Julius Randle is in trouble is the simple fact that if he no-shows, like he will, come postseason time, I mean, I hope for the best for the Knicks, but let's be honest with ourselves. I give Dodgers fans crap about this all the time when it came to Kershaw no-showing when it actually matters. And I gotta keep it real and give the same energy to Knicks fans. Knicks fans keep trying to say that it's a small sample size with Randle. Now folks are starting to get to the idea that, like, maybe this dude, it just ain't built for this. But there's plenty of you still saying that Randle can get it done for the Knicks in the postseason. For those of you who still hold on to that pipe dream, I'm going to say this. When Randle lets us down in the postseason, which he more than likely will, in the offseason, we now have more than enough pieces around Brunson that we can dump Randle and get back a player because we didn't give up any of our first-round draft picks. Randle is a perfectly serviceable player in the NBA. He's just not a playoff player, caliber player. And because of that, if the Knicks truly want to make a title run, Randle's got to go. And build a team around Brunson, who is more than capable, as he has shown, in getting the All-Star nod. He should have been a starter over Dame Lillard. Let's just be blunt about that. Should have been a starter over Lillard. But Brunson has shown that he is ready for the moment. And he showed that he was capable of leading the team last year. Barrett and Randle were nowhere to be found, as I pointedly noted last year. So, with Bogdanovich in play now for the Knicks as the stretch four, Julius' role starts shrinking as we move forward. And yes, Tom Thibodeau is not going to want to give up Randle. But guess what? This is not Tibbs' choice in the matter. So at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, Julius Randle's got to ball out come postseason time. If he doesn't produce numbers and show up, because it's not just about the Knicks winning. Now we're in a spot where Julius actually has to produce numbers. Because we've seen the Knicks win playoff games because of Brunson. If Julius no-shows, and people used the ankle excuse last year as why he couldn't play well in the playoffs. That's not the reason why he couldn't play well. The Miami just punked him out. They had, like, bam, punked out Randle. Let's just call a spade a spade. The Knicks fans know it. The Heat fans definitely know it and let us know about it. Randle knows it. Bam knows it. I mean, everybody knows what happened to Randle in the postseason last year. So, let's just not kid ourselves. But, it does give us the escape valve because, realistically, Randle's role in terms of the value that he supposedly brings to the team from an analytics standpoint is shrinking based off of the roster composition of the team now. We're more balanced that we don't necessarily need a tweener like Randle. We can actually prioritize a better player who's a better fit for postseason play and can bang on the boards and grab some dirty points in the paint to help Brunson. So this trade deadline was a terrific time for the Knicks. Not so much a great time for Julius Randle because guess what? He's got to show up to work and ball out the rest of this year. Because if he doesn't, he is sure as can be gone. Because the fan base and, truth be told, Leon Rose and the management team will move him. because they need to validate their mandate to James Dolan. So far, the trade moves are shifting towards making the Knicks a more balanced team. I didn't see this Bogdanovich trade happening. I was waiting for the other shoe to drop if it was going to be a major move involving Randall when RJ got traded. But I see the Knicks are playing it out and giving him one last chance to prove himself. So we're going to see what we get out of the Knicks. So with this trade, you actually don't even need to worry about, because like everyone was worried about the Knicks trading Randall for Karl Anthony Towns. And that was going to be another disaster in the making. But with this trade, I think the Knicks are at least looking at other options, so they don't need to focus on someone who's who's primarily shooting three-pointers as a core component of their offensive game. So we're going to see what the Knicks do. But I do actually have to say I'm more excited about the Knicks next year than I have been in quite some time. So take for that what you will. We're going to be back after the break with some of the props I'm looking at. So stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
Don't go anywhere. The Fantasy Throwdown Podcast will be right back after our sponsors pay the bills.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the show. Hope you got your popcorn ready.
All right, we're back. So before we get into the props, one quick note to talk about with the NFL Awards show. Because the NFL Honor Show, it's just this prop that the league does to kind of pat themselves on the back. But the big source of controversy was the NFL Comeback Player of the Year Award, which realistically is the feel-good story of the year award in the league for someone who overcame an injury or some type of adversity and do well. I mean, basically, most of the time, it's just so they can highlight someone that overcame an injury. The league essentially had the Damar Hamlin situation pan out, and I've already talked about this, so we're not going to rehash everything. But literally, you had someone overcome death. It's not about playing in performance. Somehow, we got into this ridiculous notion that Joe Flacco should be NFL Comeback Player of the Year Award because after the Jets somehow thought it was a good idea to let Zach Wilson be the backup QB and Joe found himself without a team, that because he got another NFL job the following year, that makes him the comeback player of the year because he played well in a Gary Kubiak-based system. It's not a performance-based award. It's a freaking feel-good story award. I don't even understand the thought process of the voters going for this. But that's not even the case here. Because, yes, we have some idiot voters. But that's not even the talking point. The talking point is the voting format. How are people this bad at math? The NFL voting system that they're going by, and somehow Myles Garrett winning Defensive Player of the Year award over TJ Watt will never cease to amaze me, despite the fact that Myles Garrett was not top five in any defensive metric category whatsoever. But that's another story. Let's focus on this DeMar Hamlin voting with Joe Flacco. DeMar Hamlin had 21 first place votes for Comeback Player of the Year. Joe Flacco had 13. So you're asking yourself, Dwayne, how could Joe Flacco win Comeback Player of the Year? The answer is, the first place voters for DeMar Hamlin still want to acknowledge Joe Flacco by putting him as second place. The problem with that is that the voters voting for Joe Flacco just said DeMar Hamlin didn't play enough games and took him off the ballot completely. The scoring format being 5 points for first place, 3 points for second place, 1 point for third place, is that unless you're all in a general agreement on players and the evaluation criteria, the first place vote does not mean nearly as much as what the general consensus of the voters is. A first place vote should be worth, in this format, if you're going by this, it's at least 7 or 10 points. There should be at least double the value or more of the second place vote if you're going to go by a tiered scoring format. When we're doing most of the breakdowns of, say, any Super Bowl boxes or pools, by and large, the best split you could hope for second place is half of first place. So why on earth would a voting system, when you're trying to deal out awards, make first place worth less than double of what second place is worth? It makes no sense. It's one of the reasons why I laugh at the whole premise of this, because A, you got voters thinking that this is a performance-based award when it's supposed to be a feel-good story. This is not a metric evaluation discussion. That's what we use for MVP, Rookie of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year. That's what you're supposed to use that metric for. This is supposed to be, yay, we got our comeback player. This one, we actually had a very serious situation, and he actually came back to play next year. If he retired, that would be a different story. But you literally had Ryan Shazier win this award for not too long ago. I can't even get into this. This is beyond how ridiculous this whole process became. Ryan Shazier never even played football again and he won the award. I can't believe we actually got to this point. That we actually have to, A, have to re-explain to folks what the freaking award is, and B, that folks voting on this didn't understand the assignment and just kept putting Flacco in second place when, again, this is supposed to be a feel-good story. A guy being out of a job to start the year and getting hired by another team is not a Comeback Player of the Year award candidate. Like, that's not what this award is supposed to... You know what? I give up. This is the stupidest thing I actually have to talk about in this system. And I've already given 5 minutes, which is 5 minutes more than this conversation needed to be. I'd rather talk about how Myles Garrett somehow got gifted the Defensive Player of the Year award over TJ Watt and about four other more deserving candidates, or the fact that CJ Stroud wasn't even on the NFL MVP ballot award, which is insane. Compared to who else got nominated for NFL MVP. Like, the NFL writers should be ashamed of themselves. The fact that I know the sport better. But again, part of this is the fact that most of these writers aren't even watching the other games. They don't even know who these other players are because they're only covering one team. The National Writers are equally bad. They don't even have an excuse. But anyway, be that as it may, we need to get to other topics because we've already started running long on the complaints about how ridiculous the NFL voters are. Or the fact that Antonio Gates is still not on the Hall of Fame selection. You know what? We'll say this for another time. This rant is for another time. The fact that Antonio Gates' numbers are better than Travis Kelce's and he's still waiting to even take... You know what? We are going to move on. We're going to move on. So, let's just get into the Super Bowl props because I know a lot of you were asking about this, so let's just start talking through what we're looking to accomplish here. For most of the Super Bowl props you should be betting on, you should be looking at it from the standpoint of how are these teams going to play and what's their best avenue for winning. And realistically, both QBs, if you're looking at it, are able to move. Now, Brock Purdy is the younger QB, obviously, but he has at least shown some ability to scramble in the pocket. Now, granted, Detroit's one of the worst teams in the league at defending QB run, so it did inflate its numbers. But when you look at it, the line on Brock Purdy's rushing attempts and rushing yards are too low, in my opinion. Brock Purdy's rushing attempts prop bet is at 3.5. Brock Purdy's rushing yards prop bet is at 12.5. It opened at 10.5, but it's at 12.5 because 10.5 was way too low, and people bet that thing up. Both props are things you should be targeting because the Chiefs are still going to stack the line of scrimmage to try to beat McCaffrey. But when they go single high, that means there's probably not going to be a spy in the middle of the field for Purdy. And there should be opportunities for Purdy to step up in the pocket, especially on third downs when he has to convert short yardage. Rather than force a throw, he should be able to step up in the pocket and run for a first down. If he's being efficient with the ball, which I'm assuming he's going to be efficient with making smart decisions. So, there's opportunity there. On the flip side, we already know Patrick Mahomes is going to move. He doesn't have any feet injuries. Unlike in some past Super Bowls where he had turf toe, he is not encumbered. He doesn't have an ankle injury that like he did last year. We don't actually have to worry about Mahomes scrambling. So, when it comes down to it, we could look at Mahomes' rushing attempts prop at 4.5. I feel very good about that. Realistically, I think we could hammer that line pretty good, even more than Purdy's line. And then Mahomes' rushing yards prop bet is at 26.5 yards. Started off at 25.5, so didn't get bet up as much. But there's still equal opportunity on the Mahomes side where San Fran's offense is going to, should at least put some pressure on the Chiefs to keep the chains moving. I think San Fran's going to score on the Chiefs defense. Now, everyone's expecting it to be tied to McCaffrey. I think there's very much room for Brock Purdy to put up numbers running on the ground against the Chiefs. So, in contrast, I think the Mahomes is going to have to find ways of keeping drives alive, and it's going to be through running. So, to me, this is you attack both sides of the QB matchup with the rushing aspect. Everyone's going to be looking at passing. I think you should be looking at the rushing props and going from there. Moving on. Travis Kelce, Taylor's boyfriend, however you want to classify him, the prop bet on Travis Kelce receiving number of receptions, if you will, is at 6.5. You take the over here. It's the Super Bowl. It's possibly his last game. I think the Chiefs know the fact that in order to beat the Niners, they're going to have to throw the ball. We're going to get to the Chiefs' primary method of moving the ball, but the guy who's going to take the get the most shots at beating the Niners is going to be Kelce. They're going to hitch their wagon to Kelce, and this is the game where he's going to get spammed targets. I also like Noah Gray to catch a couple of passes as well, but I'm going to take the Kelce over 6.5 receptions prop because that's just too low. I think there's going to be a lot of short yardage passes. I don't think they're going to take the shots down the field because I know a lot of folks are looking at Sky Moore, Justin Watson, MVS. But if they're not taking the shots down the field, that means they got to throw the ball somewhere. And that means it's probably going to Kelce. It may not be deep. It may be only a 5-yard pass, but when we're talking props, that's the key aspect. I'm not worried about the receiving yards. I'm focusing on the total receptions, and I think he's getting somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 to 14 receptions. Depending on how well he's going, we could easily look at a situation where Kelce becomes a focal point of the offense and receives multiple looks in key spots during third down possessions, just because of the fact that if he's got it going, Mahomes is just going to keep feeding the hot hand. He's not going to go back to some of these other plays if Kelce's got it going on. So that's the reason why this could easily be a 12-plus reception game for Kelce in this type of environment where I don't see the Chiefs getting deep balls. They haven't been getting deep balls all year. I'm not necessarily seeing it against this San Fran secondary, even though they've been giving up yards. I think it's more along the lines of a catch and run. So that's why I look at Travis Kelce. Rashee Rice could get there, but I don't love it. I don't love it. I think it's more likely that it's a big play for Rashee Rice. To me, the way this works is that, you know, the Chiefs are still going to spam the run and then use Kelce. So for my aspect, we're going to be looking at Pacheco. I think Pacheco's rush attempts line at 15.5 is way too low. I think he gets somewhere in the neighborhood of 18 to 22 touches with the Rock. And we'll see where he goes from a rushing yard standpoint. I still think he can, looking how David Montgomery was able to gash this Niners line, I think the Pacheco line being under 70 is low. That's just me. I know I'm not in the consensus opinion on that. I know other folks are talking about that the Niners have shored up the rush defense. I'm sorry. The Packers ran on them. The Lions ran on them. I think Pacheco's better than both David Montgomery and Aaron Jones right now. Not the Aaron Jones in his prime. The Aaron Jones that we saw most of 2023. I think Isaiah Pacheco's better than both those guys. So I think the prop, because it keeps moving down. It was just under 70. It's moving closer to 67.5, depending on which book you're in. I think Pacheco's looking north of 80, and he's going to get a lot of touches. So to me, this is a lot of Pacheco, a lot of Kelce, or Rashee Rice. That's just kind of how I see the Chiefs offense going. I don't see a ton from the other guys. The only other guy I see going is Noah Gray when Kelce needs a blow. I think Noah Gray could get anywhere from 4 to 5 catches tonight just based on how Kelsey's feeling at a given moment. But those are the props I'd be looking at, is to target the horses of the Chiefs. Like, so you work on Mahomes, you work on Kelsey, you work on Pacheco, and you mix in a little Rashee Rice. But don't get cute. I don't think that we need to be cute. Because I think the Chiefs are going to keep it relatively simple. Like, they have not been going for the crazy elaborate play these last couple of Super Bowls. I don't think they have. Like, usually you do the trick play when you're the worst team. But the Chiefs right now, like, struggle enough running the basic base concepts of their offense, so they had to pare it down even further. So, I mean, I think you're probably going to see a wildcat. If you're going to see a trick play, it's going to be like Travis Kelce running the wildcat, not like, or Blake Bell running the wildcat. Yeah, the Blake Bell play could go, but it's still going to be a trick play that's going to Kelce anyway. Or Pacheco. And it's like, I don't think they're going to run the trick play and go with someone else. So yeah, that's the long and short of it. Like, I really don't think we need to overcomplicate the props. I do think that this game goes under because I think because of how the scoring lines up, essentially you're going into a situation where both teams are so run predicated that this game should be lower scoring because of the fact that the clock's going to keep burning with these rushing plays. I don't think it's that the fact that the defenses are going to stop either squad. I just think the fact that because of the score and the pace of the game being so much slower, I think that's where we target the under 47.5 because realistically, this feels closer to a 44.5 type of line because I don't think we're necessarily seeing the explosive plays over the top. I do think we're getting scoring. Don't get me wrong. The problem is the way I think both these are going to score, it's going to chew up enough clock that you're not going to get enough possessions to break the 47.5 unless there's a defensive touchdown. If we get a defensive touchdown, of course, all bets are off because that's just a spontaneous play that breaks things open. But I think it makes it a little bit trickier in that regard. It's like we could easily see turnovers, but I don't necessarily see us getting a defensive touchdown in the game, which is what I think you're going to need to get to the over. So that's going to do it for the props. Hopefully that kind of gave folks enough of an understanding of where I'm leaning in this game in terms of some of the props and bets you can make on the side rather than the actual game itself. Day of Super Bowl, we're going to have a show. We'll see if we can get my pops on from Trinidad. Not likely, but there's always a chance. But we're gonna cover the Super Bowl day of. Give my final thoughts on from a DFS standpoint as well as a betting standpoint on the game itself. And then, yeah, it's been a hell of a year, but I can only say that. Should be. I expect a good game. I do expect a good game. I hope for a good game, but I do expect a good game. Given the teams involved, it's like I'm not overly impressed by the performance of the squads, but it should be relatively even matched given the coaching dynamic and the skill position players that I have better hope for this game. Compared to some other matchups where you might have gotten a little bit more volatility. So that's going to do it for now. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. And until next time, have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and all major outlets.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.